Paul Kim and Sib Sibanda start off this episode of the Monday Christian series by defining the word faith from philosophical and practical perspectives. They counter the idea that faith means blindly believing something despite having no evidence for it, and investigate the juxtaposition of faith and reason. Let's join their discussion on the far-reaching consequences of profound truths.
Welcome to Reframed. Join us as we explore the concept of redemptive business in our unique context on the African continent.
Hello and welcome to episode 14 and the fourth miniseries in our Monday Christian podcast. In the previous miniseries, we explored the biblical Christian worldview of business through the lens of Christian hope. And now we're turning our attention to the subject of faith. I'm joined as usual by Paul Kim, co-founder and CEO at Redemptive Capital. Paul, good to have you back for another journey of discovery as we think through the implications of faith on business.
Yeah, thanks for having me again, Sips.
Right, let's start right at the beginning by defining that word, faith. It's a word that is so intertwined with Christianity that we probably don't think deeply enough about what it means. So over to you, Paul. What is faith? And does every human being have it, or is it the preserve of the religious?
It's a deep topic, and it's one that's usually invisible to many. So I'm going to approach it by talking about faith and the blindness associated with it. And then I'm going to move to my technical skill set and experience of modeling, not on a catwalk, but on a spreadsheet, and how that could help as an analogy for understanding how we and where we apply faith.
Sounds good.
So a common meaning for the word faith is to imply belief in something despite lacking evidence for it. So it is usually used negatively and closely linked to the way in which many use the word hope. I hope that it will rain tomorrow. As we'll see later on, the Bible uses faith in almost opposite ways. Faith does not exist in the absence of reason, but it exists as a result of it. And taking this one step further, one can speak about blind faith, unquestioning belief in something, even when it's unreasonable or wrong. And I think secular worldview would consider religion, and in particular Christianity, to only be upheld through blind faith, a set of beliefs without any reasonable proof to support its core tenets. They would ascribe this to cultural or family beliefs that were inherited that help people deal with life. The opium of the poor, Karl Marx, I think. What is remarkable about this viewpoint is that it can't really stand against its own scrutiny. And we'll investigate this a little bit later on. My understanding of faith in layman's terms is that we need a word to describe the trust required between the gap created by evidence and proof and an action. And let me break that down. Assuming we need 100% evidence in order to be rational about an action. In situations where we don't have 100% evidence, faith is required in order to act. Summarizing and said in another way, evidence plus faith equals action. As we'll see later on, the type of proof required for mathematics is limited to a tiny number of disciplines, and the rest of life cannot sustain such a level of burden. How can you prove the existence of any abstract value and the fact that it is upheld? So, for example, love. How do you prove the existence of love and that your wife will continue to love you through thick and thin? You just can't, and yet you have faith, and this informs the way that you live. So this brings me to the idea of blind reason. Too many people believe blindly in the power of reason without realizing that reason itself requires a number of assumptions for it to be reasonable, and it differs based on the context within which it is used. Fake news is a phenomenon that has just reached epic proportions in the modern era. A toxic mix of malicious intent and power of social media, speed of the internet, confirmation bias. This is exacerbated by the fact that most of the population has never had to fact check information they received, and that fake news creators are excelling at recreating the typical markers for pointing towards credibility. Main one being a credible person. For example, in a politician. This is a serious problem because we can't really expect everyone to fact check all of the information presented to them. And in many times, the ability to fact check specialized information is almost impossible. How am I supposed to fact check economic figures? It's just not possible. In response to this, many people are clinging to sources that they are comfortable with. We can't blame them for that. And unfortunately, also biased towards. So all we're doing is actually creating echo chambers based on even more blind faith. And this is quite frightening.
It's quite amusing. I'm sure you've seen them as well. But these interviews where you get journalists going on the street and interviewing people who of a particular political persuasion about some of the rhetoric that they've maybe got printed on their t-shirts or on banners or flyers or are chanting, and just stop and take them to task and ask them. So you are saying the X, okay? So how do you know that? Where is the evidence for that? Can you prove it? What does it actually mean? In many cases, you get people, firstly, not even sure what the words that they're saying actually mean, much less having any evidence or proof for the things that they're saying. And it's like you're saying, there's just this echo chamber of someone that they have chosen, probably for irrational beliefs, and just echoing what he or she has been saying.
Yeah, and it's even worse than that now. I mean, there's Jimmy Fallon or Jimmy, I forgot the other Jimmy's name, but they do a funny clip where they go out into the streets and they ask people about certain news events, but the news events are completely made up, never happened. And these people pretend and go along with it. It's unfreaking believable. But that is the world that we live in.
Yep.
We don't take proving something seriously. Yeah. We just adopt it. Now moving on to the modeling side. So I was trained as an actuary and we use mathematics and statistics to assess risks so that businesses can prepare for and in many cases monetize them. A key tool in our trade is to be able to build models for the uncertainty that we are trying to understand. And a model is a simplified version of reality and by definition has a lower resolution to the thing being modeled. Then you're still back to reality if you don't reduce it down to simpler components. So a street map is a type of model. It has stripped down the reality of a geographic territory to information that is relevant for traveling by a car. So just the streets, for example. And if you want to just use it for traveling by far, it's more than sufficient. The opposite is also true. If you look at a street map and disprove its usefulness because it doesn't show contours, for example, of a terrain, is a category error. It was never intended for the purpose, and thus it is the mistake of the user, not the map. And so if we kind of move over to the Bible itself is presenting a model of sorts of reality and hence does not answer all questions pertaining to every aspect of reality, so science, biology. So the question is, what is the purpose for which the Bible model is intended and using the Bible to answer life's questions in those dimensions? It answers questions that feels like science and biology cannot answer, such as why are we here? And what happens to us after death? And so moving on to the real world and away from my past academic experience, modeling reality is what each human does as they try to make sense of their lives. As we move from childhood to adulthood, we make sense of reality by adopting a worldview, a set of beliefs that we feel make the most sense of what we are seeing. We start off with growing up with our family's set of beliefs. And as different people enter our lives, friends, extended family, classmates, teachers, we continue to evolve our set of stated beliefs, often unconsciously, actually. This is a fluid situation as those around us are also evolving their views in response to the people around them. So we're also rubbing off on them. In my experience, it has just really rare for people to change their beliefs because of a concrete set of proofs. It usually happens as a result of the people around them, either due to attraction, a teacher they respect, or repulsion, parents that behaved in a certain way and they just don't like their parents anymore and they want to rebel against that. In other instances, certain life events completely break their view of the world that forces them to adopt another set of beliefs. An example of that is a Christian who's gone through tremendous suffering, a loss of a loved one, and suddenly turning their back on faith. Their worldview, parts of it weren't actually Christian. They believe that God loved them equals their family must be preserved. Once that collapses, they change their belief and turn their back on God.
It's a fascinating conversation. And I think a topic that might be a bit too soon to talk about, but you know, this is the Monday Christian, so we're going there. COVID and what people believe to be true about COVID and how was that informed? Because there was an incredible phenomenon where family members turned against each other, friendships were broken, all purely based on views on COVID. And obviously, especially in the early days where there was very little scientific information and anything that was sort of credible by sort of most standards, all sorts of information started to flood the public square on views like, you know, where COVID from, lockdowns, extensive lockdown, ivermectin, vitamin D, all of these sort of things. I've even heard about silver, people drinking silver and, you know, all of that sort of thing. And it's amazing how those issues became extremely contentious because everybody believed or felt that what they believed was based on evidence and struggled to see why other people wasn't processing the quote, evidence in the same way. And yet when you dig deeper into that, you'll find that actually a lot of people came to beliefs based on methods that are less than scientific. Like you're saying, maybe peer groups, maybe my wife's been doing a lot of research and she says, or my cousin's a doctor and he said, right? It just goes to show sometimes how flimsy the reasoning is behind the things that we hold to be true.
Yeah, I think COVID was sped up the collapse of the importance of scientific information, anecdotal information being more important. My granny ate bacon until she was 100, therefore bacon can't be bad. My granny smoked until she was 120, therefore it can't be bad. Relying on what you can see as the evidence instead of anything else.
Yeah, okay, that takes me to my next question, Paul. So this subject of faith is almost always juxtaposed with reason. So the thinking goes, either you rely on faith or you rely on reason. So what do you make of that?
Yeah, so reason is an interesting topic in and of itself. So let's dive into the weeds a little bit. If you have been involved in any debates about the validity of Christianity, so apologetics, you've probably experienced a strange combination of scenarios too, in fact, playing out at the exact same time. On the one hand, your sense of awe at the reasonableness of your faith grows. Like, wow, yo, there's incredible depth to what I believe. But on the other hand, the opponent seems to double down on the ludicrousness of your position. And this has happened to me on so many occasions, and it's just not confined to Christian apologetics. Whatever you want to debate, this is what typically happens. I have experienced people bending reality to uphold their position without batting an eyelid. And of course, they would say the same of me. Over time, I've come to realize how we can break down reason to a workable model for discussion purposes. I suspect the rise of modernist thinking and basing our definition of proof to that which is required in mathematics has created a completely unreasonable and unattainable foundation for our lives. Many who believe they are hyper-rational beings are just fooling themselves if they think their lives are based on a strict definition of proof. Even if they have proof for their convictions, their sample size is often so small they don't realize that their beliefs are nowhere near reliable. My grandmother example. What we see in the real world is very different. Different disciplines have different definitions of proof which capture the limitations inherently found in their perspective of the world. In mathematics, you can prove 1 + 1 = 2, and it's a universal truth that is true in all places at all times, unless you're in government. Right? In economics, there are many competing theories for explaining how economies work, and no economist worth their salt will claim that their theory is as solid as 1 + 1 = 2. In fact, one of the first things we learned in our first year of economics class is this phrase, ceteris paribus, which means the following. Literally holding other things constant is a Latin phrase that is commonly translated into English as all else being equal. It's a dominant assumption in mainstream economic thinking. And so provided all other variables remain the same, that is clearly a simplified view of reality because it is almost impossible to find yourselves in a period of your life where all other variables remain unchanged. History, nutrition, psychology, all of them have their own structural limitations for what is considered to be strong enough evidence to be acted upon. And so moving back to our worldviews discussion from the perspective series, at the core of our beliefs is a set of assumptions that are completely unprovable in the ultimate sense. This goes for the secular worldview as well as for the person who believes in Jesus Christ. And these assumptions require faith in their adoption and relevance to their life. So take, for example, the question of whether God exists or not. The secular person will need to prove that God doesn't exist, which would be impossible because the definition of God in many religions is being outside of observed reality. It would also be equivalent to proving swans don't exist by looking at animal life in the ark. In a similar vein, Christians would struggle to prove that God exists with 100% certainty. At this point, you may kind of raise up your hand in objection, but consider your line of reasoning for proving God. It would usually boil down to inferences such as the consistency of the Bible as a whole, which may point to a supernatural influence. You might also prove to the historical existence of Jesus, but that is limited by the way history proves things. You can't repeat that. We can't go back in time to see that, you know, Jesus really exists. It's not 100% proof. Another example would be what happens to you after you die. We have no way of knowing what happens to us after death. Secular people cannot prove that we completely disappear, and Christians cannot prove that there is life after death. And yes, someone's going to say, but Jesus. And I say, well, historical evidence again. Like, you are bound by the limitations of historical proof. So there's a core set of assumptions that one needs to adopt in faith in order to live life. And it's not provable based on the rigor of mathematical proof.
While we're talking about core assumptions, also in philosophy referred to as presuppositions, it's a bit like foundations of a building that you just never see, but is always there. But because you never see them, you don't really interrogate them as we should, right? So I remember reading a book many years ago from a well-known, I guess, character in Christian apologetics, and he was talking about how he was giving a talk at a university. And as he was talking, a student jumped up and objected, and he said, "There's no such thing as ultimate truth." And so he then turned calmly to him and then said, "Well, if that's true, then what you've just said is not ultimately true. And therefore, you've just undermined your own point.
Yeah.
And therefore, there is such a thing as ultimate truth." And so when someone stands up and says, "There's no such thing as truth," that's like looking at the top half of the building. And if we just take it at face value, you could look at that and say, okay, I guess that makes sense, you know, because everybody's got their own truth.
Mm-hmm.
But when you interrogate the presupposition, then it undercuts what you've just said,
yeah,
right?
Because that in itself is the truth.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
What you are saying, you are passing as ultimate truth while negating the validity of ultimate truth. So yeah. I'm really enjoying this conversation. Let's press on with that.
I don't want to leave our listeners in a place, well, then what, you know, what then? Like, you know, if nothing's provable,
everything's
then,
relative.
Yeah, yeah, there's more to this.
Yeah.
So before we throw out the baby with the bathwater, the first thing we can do is to check our inferences from these core sets of assumptions. So the inferences we can determine from these core sets of assumptions can be proven assuming that the assumptions held are true. Okay, I'm going to use an example just now because it is a little bit tricky. But put another way, if you believe in a core set of assumptions labeled X, what can we infer about other aspects of life from these core assumptions?
Yeah.
And we've done this in a previous essay, and I'll give you one example on about love, right? So let's start with a secular worldview. If your view of reality is that humans evolved from single cell organisms through a competitive process of the strongest survive in the context that presented themselves, then love can never be more than chemicals firing in our brain that produce a certain emotion designed to encourage individual humans to do what is best for humanity. That is the inference from those core assumptions. We can try and imbue meaning on top of this to make us feel better, which in and of itself is another evolutionary step. But love is nothing more than chemical actions that we've layered meaning on top of. It itself does not have any meaning. If something else becomes what's best for humanity to evolve, then there is nothing wrong with then discarding love, because love is no longer necessary for survival. That's the secular worldview. If you have a biblical worldview that believes in a triune God that existed for eternity past in a loving, committed relationship serving each other, then love is a foundational force that cannot be reduced down to chemical actions, because it's more than that.
Yes.
Furthermore, it can't also just be done away with as our conditions change. The source of definition of love comes from God, and if He is unchanging, so must the definition of love remain the same. Finally, love has real and ultimate meaning because it is underwritten in a real way by the God of the universe, not just because of our need to survive in a specific context. The last thing I want to say about these inferences and understanding reality and modeling reality is we have data. We've got to process data. We've got to make sense of what we're looking at. And just a fun story from when I was younger. And in 2012, I had the opportunity to be on a reality TV show called The Big Break Legacy. Lots of fun. Really got to see the behind the scenes of reality TV.
So-called reality.
So-called reality. And that's exactly the point I'm trying to make is I remember one episode, I think it was 5 or 6, where what we saw on TV and the storyline that was created was completely different from the lived experience of all the participants. We almost wanted to down our tools and say, we don't want to participate anymore if they're going to keep doing that. And what I realized was when you've got hundreds of hours of footage across multiple participants, you can actually craft whatever story you want out of a 15-minute show. And so this is one of the dangers we just need to be aware of is as soon as you're taking data and you're ignoring it, as soon as you're taking data and you're manipulating it to reinforce what you already believe, then you're not actually letting the data speak for itself. And that is something that we need to take seriously.
I like that. My final question for this episode, Paul, is if core assumptions cannot be proved, okay, which we've already said, how then do we establish what is true? How do we veer away from this world where everything's relatives, your truth, my truth, their truth, etc.? Obviously, we all know the Sunday school answer, the Bible tells me so, but at a purely philosophical level, which is the world that our listeners are confronted with every day in the workplace, How can we reasonably work out what is true and what isn't?
I think we've got a lot of examples in some of the fields that I mentioned, not mathematics, but some of the others, to try and understand how we would approach this, right? So if no one can really prove one set of core beliefs and conflicting core beliefs all appear to have the same level of support from reality, what are we to do then? Because that's where we left our listeners. Yeah. If we really want to interrogate those beliefs, then we should compare these sets of core assumptions against each other in order to assess the following. And you want to do two things. Which set of core assumptions leads to the most logical inferences that we believe are true? And the sub-bullet point here is, if you start borrowing inferences from other worldviews or your model, other models, then you need to admit that your model isn't adequate enough to explain what you're seeing.
Right.
Right. If you want to truly believe that love exists, but you have a secular worldview, you are borrowing a Christian inference. And you need to come to grips with it, right? Either you need to say, I am almost a hypocrite and okay with that, or you need to dump the secular worldview and adopt the Christian worldview, or you need to dump the Christian worldview and dump your desire to believe that love is real.
We're talking earlier about human rights, for example. That's
human rights.
Example.
That's a perfect example. There is no substance underlying human rights from a secular worldview other than we together have agreed on that, or we want it to be true. But from a Christian perspective, that substance is underwritten by us being made in the image of God.
Right.
The second thing you need to do is, do the core assumptions I hold on to, as well as the inferences, make the most sense of the life that I'm living? And this is where I refer back to, are you throwing away data points to make sense of your life? So what we can't do, as a caution, is interpret data through one set of core assumptions in order to try and make sense of another. This would be a nonsensical exercise. And as a way of example, if you don't believe in a God, then anything that cannot be explained by science today will be set aside as provable by the science of tomorrow. Just because we can't explain a miracle now doesn't mean science can't explain it tomorrow. And that's because you've already created the assumption that God doesn't exist. So you can't try and assess Christianity from a worldview that says God doesn't exist. You kind of have to move into the Christian worldview first and then try and assess whether life makes sense from that perspective. I actually borrowed this from Keller. That is the approach of trying to understand which worldview is more likely to be true. Take each on its own merit, figure out what the logical inferences are, and then let life hit that and let the model stand on its own substance or collapse.
A concluding question then. So faith is not then the opposite of reason. Is it, Paul? Because that's where we started at the beginning, that there's often this view that faith and reason are opposites.
Yeah, no, it really isn't. Biblical faith is faith that is based on evidence.
Thanks, Paul. We'll wrap that up there for this episode and pick up the conversation in the next one.
Great. Thanks, Sibs.
Thank you for joining us. This episode of Reframed was brought to you by Ziwani, a community of business leaders who partner together to live out their kingdom calling in the marketplace within Africa. Ziwani is a Mergon initiative. To know more about us, visit our website at ziwani.com. That's ZIWANI.com.